Hi, my name's Tash Au, and my new book is called The South.
Tosh Au's new novel, The South, is a coming-of-age story of 16-year-old Jay, whose family moves for a summer to an inherited farm in southern Malaysia. But more than just a coming-of-age novel, The South also explores generational trauma associated with migrants, as well as environmental changes throughout Malaysia during this time. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Tosh Au. Can you give our listeners a description of The South? Can you set it up for us?
It's a novel that is many things in one slim volume. It's a coming-of-age novel. It's a portrait of a family. And it's, in its own way, a portrait of a country living through a time of great change.
When I started reading the novel, I was pretty ignorant about Malaysia as a whole, and I learned quite a bit about the ethnic groups and the tensions there and also the environmental changes. When you write, do you have a reader like me in mind, or is familiarity with Malaysia something you'd expect readers to have before picking up the novel?
In fact, neither. I don't have a particular reader in mind, nor do I expect people to have any familiarity with Malaysia. I think that the book just portrays Malaysia as I see it. It doesn't attempt to explain. It just talks about things that occur naturally. Now, obviously, if one isn't familiar with Malaysia, if one is reading from, say, America, there are small leaps of understanding to be made. But that is true of any actor reading, I think. When I read American novels, when I was a teenager, for example, and first starting to get fascinated by America and American novels, I'd read all these books that had descriptions of baseball games in them. And I had no idea, you know, Don DeLillo's Underworld, I'm the top of the ninth or the bottom of the... So, I mean, all these things were completely foreign to me, and yet they didn't interfere with my, I mean, well, I had to make a leap of understanding, but they didn't interfere with my appreciation of the stories behind them.
So we know from the first couple of pages that Jay and Tuan are starting up a romance. Why did you choose to begin with this point in time and reveal it early to the readers?
You know, it's one of those novelistic instincts, I would say. It was really not conscious. I knew I wanted it to be very central, the love affair between the two boys. I wanted it to be very central to the story, and I wanted to foreground it. And I wanted it to be something that was unpacked as the novel went on, rather than leave it to the end as a reveal. And it just seemed to me to give the reader and to give myself a snippet of what happens between them was so important right at the beginning, before we then look at the context in which their love affair takes place, which is the family.
Jay is 16, approaching adulthood, but still is a child. He's balancing a lot in the book, teasing and bullying at school, understanding tensions in his parents' relationship, navigating of his own sexuality, just to name a few. And you mentioned that this is a coming-of-age story. A lot happens in this short amount of time, doesn't it? I mean, I think his mother even thought he grew a couple of inches while they were in the South. Can you talk about some of the changes he does go through?
Absolutely. I mean, all the action in the book takes place in one short month at the end of the school year. And Jay is 16, going on 17, just short of his 17th birthday. And up till then, he's been a very shy boy, very diffident, not great at school, slightly excluded, slightly bullied. And his father finds this very frustrating. He's not man enough. He's not growing up enough. And so he's taken to this farm. The whole family travels to this farm. It's a very dilapidated piece of land, and which they have inherited from Jay's grandfather. And Jay is sent out to work in the fields. The land is parched. It's unyielding. It's harsh. The weather is hot and dry. It's the end of a very long El Nino year, which struck Malaysia that year, 1997. And everything is dying. And the family is sort of dying too. And Jay is sent out into the fields, where he is a fish out of water. He doesn't know what to do with his body. He's a city boy, slightly feeble compared to the men and compared to his cousin Chuan, who he doesn't actually know is a distant cousin. And he, because he's forced to play this role as a man, he starts to gain a greater awareness, a greater consciousness of his body. And as his body grows, so too does his awareness of what's going on around him, both in his family and within himself.
A passage I highlighted was from Fong's perspective, and he's reflecting on his mother. Mistress, wife, no one had to explain these terms to him, the difference in status. He knew which position his mother occupied simply by observing the negatives, what she omitted from the story instead of what she told him. And I don't want to reveal any spoilers, but this theme of women as wives and mistresses does come up a few times in the book. Can you talk a little bit about the role of women in this culture?
Well, the women in this family are really straddling a sort of a great moment of change. So the older women of the generation who belong to the generation of Jay's mother, they're still mired in a kind of position of powerlessness where they, despite being incredibly intelligent and incredibly ambitious, they don't enjoy the privileges that society affords to men. Now, the younger women, such as Jay's elder sisters, Lina and Yin, they were born into a very different world. And they're the equivalent of my sisters, who were born into a world where women were beginning to have the right to do all sorts of things, go to higher education, choose the jobs they wanted to, choose the partners they wanted to, who might or might not have been men, which is not the case with Jay's mother, Sui, or Fong's mother, who remains unnamed, because she doesn't even have a place in official history. She doesn't even have a place in the official portrait of society. Men of a certain age and social status, which didn't even necessarily have to be so high in Malaysia and other parts of Southeast Asia, very often had mistresses. And this was a very well-known fact, and one couldn't say anything about it. To address this situation was to make some sort of transgression that felt so dangerous to the whole family structure. So everyone kept quiet about this, but it doesn't stop the whole town from talking about it. And the kids have to live with this.
That quote that I just read, it also touches on the theme of omission. Jay keeps his relationship with Chuan hidden. Chuan keeps a secret about his friend Jesse. There's Yin's secret boyfriend, etc. It seems like everyone's keeping some sort of secret, aren't they?
Yes, I think this is it's true of a lot of families, and I don't think this is necessarily applicable only to Asian families. I think when you're at that age, when you're 16, 17, 18, 19, to have a new love interest is something that you feel so intensely that you want to keep it private, particularly in the case of the two boys, where you also know by that stage that this is not something that is generally held in favorable light by the rest of society. Both these boys have had enough experience of homophobia and discrimination to know that actually it's going to be difficult to come out with their relationship. But the girls who are, ostensibly in more conventional relationships, they too are uneasy about saying who they want to be with because they're all afraid of censure. They're all afraid of breaking some kind of invisible rule that seems to hold this family together. They all assume that this family runs along certain lines, which are, traditional Chinese family lines of duty, of obligation. But as it turns out, the families, I don't think this is a spoiler, the family's going to drift apart anyway. And this is what we discover. I guess the question is, how do they drift apart in this long, slow month down in the south of the country?
The farm that Jay's family, or I guess his mother really, owns, is declining in production, which results in a loss of income. The environmental changes, while sometimes subtle, it runs throughout the course of this book. And I recall this quote in which Jack is speaking to Fong. This year drought, next year floods. That's what the world is like these days. America makes more cars, the ozone layer over Wisconsin gets damaged, we get rain. Did you set out to write an environmental novel?
Strangely enough, I didn't. I just wanted to write a novel that captured the time and space in which these people were living. And it's turned out that actually it did become a kind of environmental novel because you can't live in that area. You can't live in that area in that country without noticing all the things that are happening to the environment, that all the damage that is occurring to the environment. And it's one of the things that sets Jay and his family apart from Chuan and Fong's life, because they come from the city. And you know, this goes back to my own experience, because I grew up partly in the city and partly in the countryside with my country cousins. And when I was in the city, the structure of the city protected me from the changes in the environment. They insulated me from those changes. So when there was a drought, well, some days the water pressure might have been less great, but we still had water. But when I was living in the countryside, when there was a drought, there was no water. Or when you turned on the tap, the water was brown and dirty with silt and mud from the river. And when Jay finds himself living on the farm, he realizes actually he's now very close to the elements. He's very close to nature. He's close to the world. And this is how the other half of the country lives. This is how a part of his family lives. And I think this triggers some sort of a change within him. And because he's at that age now, 16, 17, and he's starting now to read books, he knows something is changing inside him. And this is, I guess, the coming of age novel. The coming of age novel is not just the romantic or the sexual element. It's also the greater awareness of his place in the world and how his world is attached to global trends, to global patterns. And he's starting to be aware of how Malaysia is connected to, in a very, very tenuous, but also quite solid way, to American economics.
There were a few descriptions that incorporated the sensory aspect of scent. And it was like the smell of solitude, the scent of loneliness, the smell of safety. And I think I noted these because when it comes to sensory descriptions, smell isn't one I stumble upon often. Talk to me about using this sense in your writing.
The sense of smell was one of those things that I personally, as a child and a teenager, associated very much with being taken out of my environment during the school vacation when I was sent to live with my family in the countryside. I'd feel terribly lonely and completely out of place and sometimes scared, very anxious. And there would be all these unfamiliar smells. The sights, I think, I got used to. You get attuned to the rhythm of life. You get attuned to the sounds even. But the smells to me were always terrifying. And I think I never really got used to them. And nowadays, they still trigger me. And I guess because I felt them in such a visceral way myself, my characters also felt them. I guess that is the part of one of the ways in which I'm most present in the novel, by the way the characters smell things. I think it's also true, as a general rule, that when we get taken out of our home environment, we become hypersensitive, hypersensitized to all sorts of things, and scent is one of them.
Another quote that captured my attention was this: "The reasoning of penniless migrants whose every act was explained by their pennilessness, whether to spend money, save money, eat, not eat, be happy, be sad, everything was traced back to their arrival in their new country with nothing to their name." This felt like a truth to me. Can you talk about this?
Well, this is what I grew up with. I come from a family of immigrants from southern China. Although by the time my sisters and I were born, our families had been in Malaysia for several generations. It was still a story that was passed down to us, and everyone who was talked about, everyone we knew in the family was talked about in these terms. Their stories were traced in this way. They had come from China or they'd come from somewhere and they were penniless, and look at them now, they're still penniless, or they're very rich, or their behavior. Very often people's behavior was traced back to the fact that they had once arrived penniless. So if someone was very rich but very mean and very stingy, it would be explained by, oh, well, you know, it's because when he arrived, he had no money. When someone was very cruel to other people, even to their children, it would be explained by the fact that, well, you know, it's only because when they arrived in this country, they had no money. And it's as if the people in my family could never get over the fact that someone in their family had once come from somewhere else. And this is what is handed down to the younger generation. So when people talk about inherited trauma, this is often what they're talking about. They're talking about processing strange behavior that seems to come down from their ancestors in ways they cannot explain. And we are left to process it, and we can't process it because we can't understand what lies behind all the frustration, all the anger, and also sometimes the joy. We can't really explain that. But it comes from, I guess, the act of immigration and how it takes generations and generations to work through people's systems.
I have one final question before I wrap up, but I want to talk about perspective. Some chapters were told through first person, some would shift into third. How did you decide the best approach to tell a certain character's story?
Well, the first person passages are all J. We see the day-to-day life of the farm, of his arrival from the capital, and his progression through the days in the first person, because that was the original novel. I really wanted the novel really just to be very tight to his experience, to his point of view, to his 16, 17-year-old point of view. It would just be about his fascination with and connection to the land, his fascination with, growing fascination with Chuan. But then I realized that I, for many different reasons, I had to include the family, because I wasn't a 16 or 17-year-old. I didn't want to pretend to be a 16 or 17-year-old. I was an older writer reaching back in time and trying to recreate, to reconstruct that moment of being 16 or 17, which is why in the text you get moments of the older writer appearing just very gently, a few touches here and there. But as the older writer emerges in the text, so too the older writer brings the awareness of time. And when I look back at that time, and Jay is really in many ways a proxy for myself, I realized that all the things that were most important to me at that time, defining myself, defining my body, trying to determine who I loved, who I didn't love, all those things were not taking place in a vacuum. They were taking place in a context, which was the family. And all around me, my family was having to deal with their own mess. My mother was having a slight breakdown. My dad was possibly losing his job. No one really cared about me. No one really cared about the stuff that I thought that everyone cared about. And so the third person points of view are really the writer recreating what he thinks those people felt when they were in this farm. Everyone is pulling in a different direction, and it's not until many, many years later that the writer realizes this.
Do you have a hope for what readers will take away from the book?
You know, I never have a hope for readers. One of the things I love about writing is that the book is the medium through which I travel through a particular time and space with the reader. If you pressed me, what I would like the reader to take away would be a sense of how time passes, how time changes, and how we change with time, and how we are all still that 17-year-old. We just sort of forget about it as we grow older.
Well, the book is The South. Tosh Au, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Beth.
That was Tosh Au, author of the book The South, which was published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.